mulher apologista, cara, que estou nessa quangua. And then, em quanto você.
Thank you. What's up, Aiden? Welcome all members of the portfolio committee, honorable members, you are welcome. Oh, this is another apology that I think we want to register. Is honorable to Ms. Shabalala, who is out of the country.
Okay, I'm not sure it's relevant at this point, but we would like to apologize, give the apologies from the minister and deputy minister who are unable to attend the investor conference in Johannesburg.
Thank you. I must ask you to move all this and again. Okay. But apology accepted. But all the members, we will be receiving the annual report. I think it's not for the first time we have been there. I think it's our third interaction. But I would like to take this opportunity first to ask them for the pursuit delegation. It's not 100% safe. There's an opportunity for them to introduce themselves. My name is Kai Makata, the chair of this portfolio committee. Next to me is Moni and Sam. One of the committee is new colleagues.
I'm supposed to support the member of the committee.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Carol Fury, a member of the committee designated by the African National Congress.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Dora Dlamini, member of the committee. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I'm Chabulile Mukwanazi from the African National Congress, member of the Public Enterprise.
Good morning, Eric Marie, member of the committee.
Thank you, honorable members. We'll cross over the floor to you, Chair, to introduce your team.
Thank you very much, Chair, and for another opportunity to sit down and get the wisdom, report back and get the wisdom of the committee. My name is Mwakila Tlatla, I'm the chairperson of tonight, and I'll just allow my to introduce themselves the same way you have done, and I'll start with the chairperson of the audit committee.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Talib Sadiq, and I'm a director at NL and chairman of the audit committee.
Good morning, Chair. Thank you very much. I'm retired General Titi Matan, a member of the board.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and members of the committee. I'm Dani De Toey. I'm the Group CEO for the NEL.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and members of the committee. My name is Carmen LaGrange and I'm the Group CFO of the NEL.
My name is Apple Helsby. I'm the Acting Deputy Director General for Transport and Defence Enterprises of the Department of Public Enterprises.
Thank you, honourable members. Now we know each other. I think we have to start with the presentation. You have about 45 minutes to, because we would like also to get another hour for engagement. Therefore, Chair, take it. It's yours.
Thank you very much, Chairman. The presentation is going to be done by Tamaria Van Chanting, the Group CEO, the Group CFO, and then there is a section that deals with some of the investigations should be done by the Audit Committee. But just as a broad statement, the year under review, or the year that we are looking at, is truly our full first year as directors of juveniles. So it is our work from April to the 31st of March. So we will be pleased to then take questions after that. May I hand over to the group CEO?
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson of the committee, members of the committee, on the presentation, we need to be rather fast and effective, 45 minutes, but we'll focus on that. So what we intend to cover in the presentation is firstly an introduction, so a little bit of background. Then we want to briefly give you an update on the governance status. Then I'm going to cover the progress on the turnaround plan, what we have achieved so far. Then we're going to jump into the detail. The purpose of the meeting today to present our financial results for the last financial year. We're also going to address the external audit opinion and corrective action plan on those audit findings. We're going to highlight status on the irregular expenditure, and then Chairperson also, during our last engagement of the 4th of September, there were some specific questions, and we have tried to answer those questions. It's attached in the back of the presentation. So. If we can immediately go into an introduction, and again, I'm not going to cover it all, it's a lot of words, and we're a bit pressed for time. But I think in summary, Chair, it's fair to say that the board is confident in analysis, the core technology and the skills and capabilities that is required to be successful in the international arena, in the defense industry. In the year, and also since the board has been appointed in April 2018, we were, however, faced with a number of challenges, and I want to briefly reflect on these challenges. So in our investigations, we came across a number of unprofitable sales, loss-making contracts, onerous contracts. We have taken prudent and actions to get out of those onerous contracts. In some cases, we have to pay back advance payments to international customers and so on. But we have made very good progress in terms of getting out of this situation. We also faced a situation where we had higher costs with declining revenues, poor inventory and cash management, high dependency on large and complex contracts, especially one, the Hoefijzer contract that did not proceed as planned and had major impact on our financial situation. We have a lack of basic financial discipline and internal controls. For example, we don't have an integrated enterprise resource planning tool, integrated HR tools, integrated financial system. So obviously in such an environment it's quite critical and very difficult to consolidate our numbers if one does not have a solid system to support you. Combined with poor governance, elements of mismanagement, overzealous and expensive acquisitions. So we are reviewing all the acquisitions that were made in the last years to understand the circumstances under which it was made, what the valuation principles was, etc., etc. And then in general corruption, as we are seeing in the case of the State Capture Commission, currently under the Zondo Commission. So in terms of the next slide, introduction, continue. Since the appointment of the board in May, the board effectively started. The board was focused on improving governance, and a lot has been done in terms of governance. Our investigations, I think the main ones have been successfully concluded. We are now expediting the findings of those investigations. We have obtained legal opinion on all those investigations. We have a number of senior executives currently suspended, subject to investigation. We have dismissed one of our senior executives, and we have a number of staff that is also currently going through disciplinary hearings based on the findings of these investigations. Of course, one of the key elements of progress from the board's perspective and my perspective is that we now have the full core executive team in place. So we've appointed the group HR executive, the group chief financial officer, Carmen, joined us in September of this year, and we've also appointed a very experienced group chief operating officer. And also all the chief executive officers of our divisional operations have been permanently appointed.
Also, last time we spoke about the tax status of the organization, and I'm happy to report now, Chair, that Denel is tax compliant in terms of all its operations, all its legal entities, and we have valid tax certificates for the full business. Chair, looking at the Denel at a glance, our main numbers, and the group CFO will go into some more detail, but in this slide you can see the comparison between the last financial year and the year before that. So on a revenue base, 3.8 billion as compared to 5.8 in the 2017-18 year. Cash generated 575. Our debt equity situation is obviously worse off compared to the previous year. But the good news is that this has since improved since the recapitalization of the business. I remind the members that we received a recap of 1.8 billion on the 31st of August this year, Chair. Borrowings is at 3.4 billion, so that is long-term loans in the bond market. We had a net loss of 1.75 million, and we have spent R&D of 108 million in the last financial year. Chair, from a skills development perspective, we have spent 32 million on skills development. Corporate social investment, not much, around 600,000 that we spent in that domain. Our employee numbers, Chair, you can see that the headcount has reduced from roughly 4,600 to 3,970, and it is now further reduced. We're currently around 3,650 in terms of employee numbers. Our spending on black-owned businesses, Chair, 417 million, so we're happy that we could still perform in this context. Chair, in terms of BEE, we currently have a valid level 6 certificate. We have done our employment equity plan for the next 3 years. Now, indications is that we can move to level 4 by April 2020. So we have defined the targets and the objectives in this regard. Female employees makes up 58%, and ACI appointments in the last year, Chair, was 83% of all employments. Moving on to governance, Chair. So again, it talks about the appointment of the core exco. I'm not going to go through that again. Very important action for us too was to appoint capable internal auditors. And we have outsourced this function to Ernst & Young, Chair, and they have been appointed in September. And we're currently actively working with them in terms of all the objectives, priorities, and of course addressing the audit findings specifically from the last financial year. We are also updating our delegation of authority to enable the effective management and accountability of the organization. And we're actively cooperating with the State Capture Inquiry and SIU with our ongoing investigations, reducing irregular expenditure and completely eradicating fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So that's the main focus here. We have also recently updated our supply chain policy. It is in final review. So here we're trying to find a good balance between business execution, agility, in the business, but also following all the provisions of the Public Finance Management Act. So, Chair, then briefly on the turnaround plan, progress to date. I'm happy to report last time we were here, we said that we have an imminent order intake, and now I'm happy to report that we have secured the largest export contract in the history of the NEL, export contract of 6.3 billion. So I think, if I may, Chair, it's a bit like Mopimpi scoring the try in the World Cup. That's what it means to us. It was absolutely wonderful to finalize, and a big effort by the board, management, and our respective teams to secure that. So we're very proud of that achievement. So, Chair, year to date, we have an order intake of 7.8 billion compared to the same period in the previous financial year of 509 million. Just to give it a bit of context, in the complete previous financial year, we took in orders of 2.1 billion. So this is really a significant year in terms of order intake for us. We have wonderful order pipelines here, as I reported before, of around 30 billion. We're confident that we can secure it in the next 24 months. So the first 8 billion of that we already have successfully secured. We have a solid order backlog of around 17.5 billion. Year to date, we have sales of 1.2 billion. So also with the recapitalization, we were able to restart operations and to start to perform and to deliver to our customers. We have excellent potential in our target markets. We have exited the onerous contract on Airbus A400M, which will give us an annualized saving of around 250 million. We've mitigated the parent company guarantee of 101 million euros. We've reduced operating costs, Chair, and we continue to do that. So 500 million, 327 million of that is related to employment costs, and the rest is general operating expenses. We have restructured our head office. We have reduced the exco from 12 to 5 core positions. In that process, we've reduced the headcount in the head office by around 20 people, cost reduction of 15 million. One of the key questions, of course, Chair, is we still have the capability to expedite these orders, both in the domestic market and also our international orders. And we have stopped the exodus of people at NLC. People are becoming more positive, the morale is improving, they see the support from government. I think they believe in the direction that the board and the management is taking the organization in. And you can just see as a reference the capability. So around 66% of our workforce today is still technically qualified people. Next slide, please, on the turnaround progress to date, Chair. So here, one of our main missions in terms of the strategy that we have presented to the board and agreed in February of this year was to exit non-core assets. And we have potential of 1.6 billion in this regard. Now, Chair and committee members, it's a combination of exiting non-core business and also to exit businesses that are loss-making. So in this context, we have exited the aerostructures business, so that's around 250 million of the 1.6, and we have also recently submitted a request to the minister, to DPE, to divest our equity in Hensoldt, which will give us a cash of around 160. So we're sitting roughly on 410 of the 1.6 billion. And we have identified all the other opportunities. We are actively working through those opportunities, but we're also very careful and cautious. We want to make sure that we do the right thing. So we go through a rigorous review in the board and management to make sure that we take the right decisions. On ATPs, I'll speed up a bit. We have potential of generating 2 billion. In this context, we have more than 40 expressions of interest, Chair, both local and international players that are interested in either outright acquisitions of part of our business or to partner with us to become a strategic equity partners. We're making good progress on the Roofeiter program. On the section variant, the first product baseline, we only have 4 requirements to be verified by the customer, and we hope to conclude that in November. Then we have the production baseline of the first vehicle, one of the other 9 variants. So that's really, really good progress. I will stand with that for now, Chair, and I will hand over to Carmen LaGrange, the CFO, to take us through the financial results. Thank you.
Thank you, Donnie, and once again, Chairman and members of the committee, I'm very excited to be here and help Denali in this journey to financial sustainability. However, reporting on our numbers for the current year, you'll see under 2018-19 financial results, we've had a significant drop in revenue by 38% to 3.8 billion, as the GCEO mentioned. And that lower revenue was due to low production activity and the fact that some of the operations then have to be restarted. If you look at the GC loss, you'll see 614 million negative as opposed to the 438 from the previous year. And that's largely as a result of labor under recovery, in spite of the fact that Johnny mentioned there were headcount reductions. Looking at the net loss situation, 1.75 billion, that's due to high interest expenses, exit of loss-making divisions and onerous contracts, and also the eager cost to divest out of certain things. Poor financial performance, again, was mainly due to a number of the liquidity challenges, which you've heard, and we were grateful to receive the 1.8 billion on the 31st of August. But that did result in us having to now restart operations and attractive penalties, attractive loss of interest from a lot of our suppliers, and we found ourselves having to deal with numerous legal processes as we are challenged around the payment of that fee. Over the page then, on the solvency issues, you'll see a deterioration in reserves since 16-17 from a high of 2.3 billion to now a minus of 1.69 billion. So whilst the recap does improve our equity, we still got a long way to start to strengthen our balance sheet and to restructure. And then another disappointing result, you'll see the cash level, the lowest ever, at 575 million at the end of 31 March 2019. Having said that, and grateful to the shareholders of the recap, there are certain conditions of the recap, and I also just wanted to highlight that as in our management team and as the board, we're mindful that we need to meet the conditions of the recap, those recap conditions being around the disposal of our property portfolio, the disposal of non-core assets, and the GCEO refers to some of the activity that's currently taking place, finalising the now in state or future state, concluding SEPs, monthly progress reports to DPE and National Treasury, and obviously making sure that we remain tax compliant. Okay, so if we then turn over to what the auditors disclaim us on, and if you look at the list there of the reasons for the disclaimer, there's about 12 items. I want to focus really on two of them because I think the two that I focus on is going to capture really the essence of what happens into now. So the first one, and I'll try not to bore you because I know accounting is a bit of a boring subject, but on revenue, it really was around the application of a new standard. So that revenue line item, if you account for revenue incorrectly, it impacts operating costs, it impacts cost of sales number, it impacts the inventory number, it impacts the contract liabilities, because obviously when you receive an advance payment guarantee, you could either recognize that correctly as a liability or you could recognize it in revenue. So if you remember previous slides ago, we had a high of about 7 billion and 5 billion in 16 and 17, and when you look at the 18 number, you see that we've drastically reduced the revenue number to 3.84 billion, and that's part of the accounting incorrectly for revenue. Then on the property, plant and equipment, the Auditor General disclaimed on the basis that our assets were undervalued, and that was because we didn't apply the new standard, IAS 16, which says that come the end of the financial year, you're supposed to recalculate the value of the assets based on your future useful life. We didn't do that. A lot of those assets were either at R1 or at the net book value, and we should have revalued it, and that might have made our balance sheet a little bit stronger. So the other ones then are also kind of a consequence of incorrect classification, like if you go further down the line, operating expenditure and contingent liabilities, and then also further down the line, revenue and income always has a deferred tax and an income tax application implication, and so therefore you see those items also listed as disclaimer items. So moving on to the next slide, Chair, number 5, the root causes for the disclaimers were really around the fact that we had repeat audit findings, so revenue, PPE, and corresponding disclosures. There were vacancies throughout the now and instability of key management positions, really inadequate skills, knowledge of accounting standards, and then general lack of accountability and commitment towards improving the internal control environment. So with the hire of internal audit being outsourced to EY, we're now starting to work with the internal auditors to improve that. There was also a lack of consequence management that the AG cited, and the lack of sufficient review by senior management, as well as a slow pace in addressing the root causes of some of those findings raised. So when you look at what did they do over the last 2 years in terms of the percentage of issues addressed, they roughly got about a 50% correction right now, even that wasn't enough. And so you'll see later on, I've shared with you a fixed plan around how do we, on the one end, improve the financial discipline and controls, and then on the other end, how do we capacitate this organization from a people, process, and system perspective to improve the integrity of the financial reporting. So given what we see is emerging at the Zondo Commission, and based on some of the outcomes of our own forensic investigations, which we'll talk to later, Jalal has not only seen the impact of the state capture faltering through the numbers, we believe we'll continue to see a little bit more of that in the next 2 to 3 years, but it's also showing the impact on our supply chain environment. So what you find is that inside of the organization, in terms of the control environment, there's a lot of fear in terms of, you know, taking responsibility for signing off on things, and that's a process that through us overhauling the supply chain, improving the delegation of authority, we hopefully try to address some of those issues. I've then listed on the next page under key outcomes for Janelle Finance going forward, but this really applies to the entire organization. 5 things that we believe will help us get to a better set of financial results. So, Chair, the first thing is addressing the prior year audit findings and moving them now from a disclaimer to a qualified opinion and then an unqualified audit opinion. And we have a plan to do that over the next 2 to 3 years, because you really can't go from a disclaimer to a clean audit. And so the plan we've devised helps us to achieve a steady improvement in progress in the financial reporting environment over the next 2 to 3 years. The liquidity plan for the next 5 years, again, we have a process in place where we look at monthly cash flows, and we're also looking simultaneously at how do we restructure the now balance sheet, which, as you know, while we are technically insolvent, we still believe that we are going concern into the future. The third thing is around building a credible finance function and introducing consequence management to improve the performance culture at Danal. So the credible finance function is really around the people that are in there with the right qualifications, the right depth of experience, and the ability to report in at the right levels of Danal. So it's about capability, it's about the process that enables them, and it's about the systems that support them. And so we rolling out the finance function effectiveness program, improving the integrity of the numbers, really there we're looking at how do we work closer with the AEG around interpretation of the standards, so that we make sure we align in terms of, first of all, how do we interpret accounting standards, and then how do we implement the accounting standards. This year we're planning to have an interim audit, which will be status of records review in the 3rd week in November, so that's another positive thing. And we've got our AG to buy into how we plan to do that, so that they can get an early indication of the extent to which the control environment and our accounting activities are being improved. And then finally, I mentioned how we've appointed EY and are working to improve the internal control environment. And then, Chair, on the next one, which is really the fixed plan that I allude to, and just to simply make it easy for the members to understand, on the left-hand side, I put all the items that enable people, processes, systems, and support. So they range from looking at the credibility of the ERP system and the consolidation, working with internal audit, the finance function effectiveness project, and then most importantly, the ICT audit and supply chain, which really needs to make sure that is put in place in a manner that we not only detect fruitless, irregular, and wasteful expenditure, but we also prevent the incurrence of irregular expenditure. And I'll talk to irregular expenditure in the next slide. On the right-hand side, Chair, it's really about saying what is the basic financial discipline that needs to be put in place in the business and throughout the finance function. And when you look on the right-hand side, it's about training, it's about documenting business process, making sure we do walkthroughs of the controls, and also making sure we do regular reviews and regular reconciliations of the numbers, so that we can not only provide credible numbers, but that also that our management can rely on those numbers to make decisions for Janelle. Then the next section, Chair, from my side is really the irregular expenditure. And of course we should spend some time on the irregular expenditure because we know that it did come up in questions. So what we did is we did an analysis of the irregular expenditure over the last 3 years. So if you go from the left to the right, March 17, 18 and then 19, what you'll see, Chair, is we've got a total irregular expenditure in the 2019 year of 2.1 billion. Previously, in the March 2018 year, we reported an amount of 510 million rand. The difference of the 1.389 million is really, billion is really around the fact that you've got an opening balance that is now growing, because in December 2018, the board instituted a process where they appointed an independent auditor who then looked at all the transactions that took place in the period 16, 17, 18, 19. So they tested 80% of those transactions. And as a result of doing that, they found on that non-compliance to triple PFA a number of irregular expenditure that took place. They categorized the expenditure into different line items in terms of was it a contract that was awarded incorrectly? Was a DOA not followed? Or was it an incorrect process, a procedure, etc.? And they classified it for us. And the long and short of it is that you'll see, in terms of a more positive statement, in the current year, we only have 196 million rand of irregular expenditure that was a result of that particular problem. The opening balance then relates to all those transactions that took place in the previous regime. And also included in that amount, you might also be interested to know that those are amounts related to transactions with VR Laser Holdings, ENE7, the CHAS contract, EML, and at the LNT loan, as I've categorized for there. Some of the investigations remain ongoing, and as we conclude them, then we will be able to report the extent of that. And so then, Chair, on the last page, I've just listed exactly what I've explained in terms of the process that we followed around that irregular expenditure. And I just want to conclude on the irregular expenditure to say, if you also looked at the numbers, you'll see that the amount that's related to OEMs and sole suppliers, where prior approval must be obtained from the group FCM manager, that amount was only 3 million in the current year. But our current process that we put in place is that group supply chain being reported to the office of the GCFO, so to be able to manage that. And also that the group FCM manager works closely with National Treasury to make sure that we manage the classification of irregular fixes and wasted expenditure. Chair, I'd just like to make a few concluding comments and then hand back over. As you'll see from both mine and Johnny's presentation, there's been a real strengthening in governance through the appointment of a capable executive team, through a very strong board that I believe really gives us the guidance that's required, and a real improvement in the control environment. There's been a significant reduction in the cost base and in the cost overhead structure. However, I want to caution the committee that these things don't come without the concomitant exit kind of cost, and sometimes when the numbers are set, they don't include some of those costs. So for example, a decision to exit the A400M contract, which is the onerous contract, also impacts other suppliers that then also then include an out. So I just want to give that as a bit of a flag. Introducing the SEPs and getting rid of non-core or disposing of non-core businesses. Again, there's a process around that, and together with DPA and National Treasury, we'll be looking at those Section 54 pre-notifications and compliance. I spoke about my fixed plan and how we want to move now to a more positive audit opinion, and finally managing the irregular expenditure through supply chain and ICT, and then finally, really looking at our liquidity challenges and how do we deal with that in the short term plan, through how we really tightly manage how we pay critical creditors, how we pay SMEs, how we convert cash from debtors that are long outstanding, and then finally in the medium to longer term looking at how we really need to restructure that balance sheet and use alternative forms of funding for our long term projects that run over many years, like project funding, trade financing, etc. So thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Carmen. We are, I think, in 44 minutes. So I am back to the Chair of our board.
Thank you very much. I think, obviously, without the guidance of the committees as well, we would not have arrived here. But what is very clear is that as we continue to check whether or not our financial statements from the previous year followed proper IFRS regulations, there may still be things from 2015 to today that may come out and still the AG wants us to deal with properly. So may the committee just anticipate that until the AG knows and says they've cleaned up what we used to believe was a year of boom around 18 billion of revenue. Suddenly you find out that actually as the AG is asking us to go back and look at the roof, you are reducing those revenues. So let's all anticipate that. Number two, and importantly, we've got a team that will do those things. The joy for us as a board today is that we are quieter. We don't have much to say. We are listening to the executives that have got to now work on those details and then give us a credibility of numbers. What we are still committed to doing to assist the country reposition this company is to sit behind the executive committee, do our proper oversight. But while the journey looks doable, it's not a two-year journey. We still think between 3 and 5 years. We can then give you the company. It's not going to be a short journey. But those are the results for the year. And then the rest of the pack is there for reading and getting more data. But we are here and available to answer your questions and to receive further guidance from you.
Thank you, Chair. I will then take you through the responses to those questions. You go to the next slide, please. So the first question at the meeting of the 4th of September was, I think, from the member from the EFF related to executive remuneration. And Chair, we've included a slide now with the audited executive remuneration numbers for 2018-19. And I think at the summarized level, you can see it's 0.8% of total labor cost. for the other financial year. And we have also included the annual remuneration for the current executive team for information. So I don't know if that adequately answers the question, but this is how we understood the question from the last session. Chair, then we had a question in terms of supply chain, and as our understanding from the question was there was a need to better understand what went wrong in supply chain and what we have since done to correct the situation. So the key areas of concern was governance weaknesses, weak controls enabling state capture-related events to occur. So this relates to the appointment of single source suppliers, etc., etc., and then ineffective and inefficient processes in place for commercial business to compete in the global market. So that was summarized the three main contributors to the status and the challenges that we faced in the past. We have briefly today also touched on what we have done since. We are investing in capable leadership, capacity building, training and development. We are implementing processes that will address proper demand setting, planning for procurement and stock control. Obviously, we're trying to avoid to have too much stock, the cost of stock holding, etc., etc., and in the end, obsolete stock that we have to write down and so on. We're also updating our policy, as I already mentioned, to improve governance. We have also benchmarked with other local international organizations, other SOEs, also from private industry, to really take the best of breed lessons learned and principles into our supply chain policy. So I think that's okay on that slide. On the next one, there was a question related to, so what have we learned in all our investigations and reflecting on the last 2 years? And here's a summary of what we have learned and the improvements. So Chair, I'll summarize on a very high level. So we uncovered a lot of poor governance practices and financial management issues, including undermining of the NAL Exco in decision making, inappropriate investment decisions, weak supply chain. So in that regard, we have appointed a credible and independent board. We have appointed an experienced executive team, and we're also improving the middle management layer now in terms of capable people with the right skills and experience and values. And we've also improved our governance framework in this regard. Poor program execution was a major contributor, especially to delays in the large programs like WHOFACER, etc., Chair. So here we had poor risk management, lack of consequence management, low productivity. So in this regard, we have appointed a very experienced group chief operating officer and divisional CEOs with the right experience background to drive a performance culture. Also, our group HR executive chair is driving our initiative in terms of our culture improvement to make people aware of what does the Danel values mean. How do we become a high-performance organization? How do we become a learning organization, etc.? I'm not going to go through all the detail in the interest of time. Limited market access and declining order book of some of our markets, Chair. And I think here the results speak for themselves. We've been around both our international customers. I visited most of them with our BD team, business development team. We have rebuilt our relationship with the domestic customer. We have very good support, we're taking in good orders, and they're really supportive to make sure that our business succeeds. Unsustainable cost base, again, here we've already commented on the savings that we have achieved in operating costs, so roughly 500 million over the last 12 months, and we have identified further opportunities to reduce costs, specifically related to supply chain domain. We had severely constrained liquidity. Here it's a combination of recapitalization, of chasing our outstanding debtors, accounts, receivable, strategic initiatives, and all of those to improve our cash situation. We have high debt gearing. That is now, of course, improved with the recap, but I think it's very important to mention that it's critical that we receive the additional 1 billion recap. Because without that, we will simply not be able to research and recover the operations. Of course, we're not only dependent on the recap, we're also actively trading to improve the situation. Unfocused and fragmented operation structure, that we have improved through restructuring. Weak supply chain management, I think we've already spoken about that. Additional and stronger leadership in that domain, updated policies, processes, procedures, misaligned stakeholder environment, DOD, DPE, Treasury, etc. Chair, here we've had a significant stakeholder engagement campaign. I presented many times to the Military Command Council. You probably know he's the most senior generals, admirals in the Defence Force. Presented a turnaround plan, what we intend to do. We have recovered our reputation with them. We have convinced them. We have built credibility with them again to support us. And you can see the orders we're getting in the MRO space, maintenance repair overall, is an example of the confidence that we have re-established. I think the last question, Chair, was related to private sector partnerships and what is the end state of the NEL? So when we finish this journey of restructuring and reform, what would the NEL look like? And you can see the example here on the left-hand side of the type of things that we deem to be non-core that we want to exit. In the middle is the core areas, and on the right-hand side is the sort of criteria. What are we looking for in partnerships and so on? But essentially, in partnerships, we're looking for somebody that can bring new technology, can bring access to different markets, or that can bring investment chair. And I think this is also recently emphasized by the Minister of Finance, that we have to get on with it. We have to expedite the non-core part. We have to expedite our strategic equity partnerships and so on. What is very important, of course, for us, it's important to exit things that are loss-making, but what is more important is to grow the core, to understand exactly where we want to go, what should be in the core and what is important, and to actively drive our market activities and to drive our investments in that domain. On the next slide, Jerry, some details on the private sector partnerships. I think this speaks also to the expressions of interest that we have received. If one takes a deeper look into those specific organizations that are interested, a lot of those are private entities that are interested to partner with us. And we also actively participate in the PPGI project that was initiated by government to look at collaboration between SOEs and private companies. So hopefully I've adequately answered the questions, Chair. If not, we can take another round and go through this. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you so much. By the way, you still have the 4 minutes on this slide. But I think you have covered a lot of us. Also, I have a problem with the issues that one of the commanders raised. Maybe that now we are all in the same way. Can we start this slide?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the fairness, because one week you start on that side and one week you start on this side, that's fair. I first want to say positive is the full complement of the extra that's been appointed. I think that's core to any business. As it is in the corporate sector, it is also core in public sector SOEs. So that's, I want to compliment that is now in place and that the board, I suppose, play a vital role in the appointment of the top senior positions within the NEL. I must congratulate you with securing a major contract. I think that is of core value to go forward and to make profit for this organization and to get out of the, to use a very strange word, lull of not actually generate income with secure contracts. As the CEO stated, as within his remark on the answers, he also stated that the middle management is actually now in place, so that's also a favorable situation. And as well that you have gained your confidence from the local business, and that would be the Defence Force of South Africa. Because how could you actually land contracts on the international basis if you can't do that on the local basis? So that's the positive things, so I mustn't lie about that. There's only a few questions I want to highlight and ask to you. You did mention, you did say a lot about supply management, and as there's a lot of people now reappointed as in executive, appointed or reappointed in executive level and middle management, that's one of the problems that was actually highlighted when we had this inquiry during the ESCOM, was with the supply chain management policy and the implementation of that. And that is one thing that, if not needed urgently, if it wasn't done, it must be done. It must be run by everybody in the organization. Everybody must be on top of it and understand how this works. Because if you follow the Donner Commission, you will pick up that this is one of the weakest points of any organization as it comes to state capture or what in problem situations could actually come to light, and always sometimes starts there, together with executive decisions that is not in place, or right, to put it that way. I further want to ask, there is some of your business units, and you did state that, how do you foresee, would that be sustainable running in the future, some of these smaller ones? Because the one thing in life is, if something is really not adding value to the top and the broader business of the now, you should cut your losses and just put off the main switch of that one. And if you've done that evaluation and you're satisfied that some of the smaller ones would actually, business units will go forward and make profit in the long run, and then you keep them, but is it sustainable? That's very important. If you can highlight me, maybe I missed along the way, I would appreciate if you just can highlight me and the whole committee in very short about the Nel Maritime, if what is going on in that business unit. And then on your guidelines, you could give me a thing about your engineering academy and so forth. I just want to ask, are you satisfied what you're doing in the long run to actually train people, the youth going for the engineering and the relevance of it? Positions for to actually make sure that you have a lifeline going. People actually retire, and a lot of people have gone to retirement now in the now. But to get more people in the learning shifts going forward in the now, so that in 5-10 years time that you have a sustainable workforce that is aligned with the now. That's really important, because you can suddenly find in a situation that you actually have to go and seek some of these expertise overseas, and I think we can have it within South Africa. Then I want to ask, your financial statements were submitted 2 months after the financial year as required by the PFMA, and we all understand the problems you need to go through. Do you foresee, and that is a question to the CFO, that this won't happen again in the next round? Because that is also a positive mark when it comes to financial statements to be on time, as most municipalities have to do. But in the case of the now, I would like to hear from your side that you think you actually structured now to be on time with that. Overall, I can say a lot about the finance and stuff, and we've learned a lot, and we've seen in the Donner Commission what is coming up. And you will struggle still, as the chairman has stated, another 2 to 3 years, either recovering from what happened or recovering some money. But eventually, you could go forward, and the positive side with the big contract you've landed, it would be very interesting if we can sit here in a year's time, from now today, in the next year, this time again, and we can look back and say what you have achieved as a new executive and what you have achieved as the new board appointed for more than a year now. I'm feeling positive that the turnaround could work. Not that positive after the 11 turnarounds in FAA, but in your case, I would say I'm positive, and I'm looking forward to see you in the years coming. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Committee is overtaking me, with your permission. as a honorable chair, I must start with the appreciation and congratulate the board and the committee on the work that you have done from the privilege that we have on our side. You'll find in my voice it's one of those privilege. But Chair, firstly, I've got a few questions that also inside me. Firstly, you said from the policies making mining company to the total loss, I know that it happened during the year of like 2015 and 2017. So what is it as a new board that you have identified as the main causes of that drop, and what is it that as a new board you have in place to make sure that you don't repeat those mistakes, and also you make the company back to its positive making company. I really appreciate the freedom of the senses from the previous statement. But on your page 10 of the report, I want to tie the chain with the report that is on Daniel's plan about the reduction of jobs. Because I think we must not lose focus on the main mandate of SOEs. One of the mandates of the SOE is economic development, economic growth, and job creation. So if you keep on losing jobs and reduction of jobs, what is your plan, and tying that with what you are doing as part of the general strategy on reducing the costs? I think you said 2017-18 you were at 4.6, 2018-19 it's still 9, currently you're at 3.6. So it will continue, or are we? Do you have a plan to improve on that? Because sitting here as the public representative, I'm really interested in job creation and job production. And exactly, Chair, can you tell me the progress to date on your page 11, bullet 1, the progress, the potential to generate cash from divesting Namco assets, the progress as of to date, what is it? I'm also interested on the progress or the clarity on the Daniel model of 2017, where you're closing down that model. What is it that will affect, what would be the effect and the effect of that, especially on job losses? On financial results, you know me, Chair, if it's a female in the particular position, I'm kind of like excited in a way, not saying anything about everyone and stuff. But on the financial results, you said the operation data that we on standstill. This is on page 13 of your report, because the net current pay specialized suppliers, because no activities were taking place on that. Can you please elaborate to me what is the remedy plan for that situation currently? What is it that you're doing? Partly, Honorable Malek covered me on the skills, National Skills Fund. I think you will answer that. Can you please be detained also on the National Skills Fund at training at Denham, but also update us on the Engineering Academy on of learning. You got 1.8 billion in the cap, but you requested vis-a-vis on the 2.8 billion request. What will happen? What is your plan covering the shortfall? Then what will happen come March 2020? If as a board, are you comfortable to say, let's say we agree with the Minister of Finance on the statement that he said when he did delivering the budget, to say, hey, very careful with the loans. If you look at Daniel and maybe in 3-4 years to come, is Daniel, are you positive that Daniel can repay that recap if that recap becomes a loan? I think that question to me, Chair, I'm driving the board to tell me whether is it when they look at the progress, when they look at the background, when they look when they took over the tenant, are they positive about the future of the company to deliver its mandate to the whole of South Africa? Lastly, Chair, for me, the issue of numbers. Can you please clarify for me, in your annual report, you said the number of artisans that you train, but the numbers are not tying up the numbers that are on your shareholders and contact. So can you please clarify to me that? If time allows, Chair, I'll come back. Thank you.
No, Chair, I think we need to make it a principle that the leader of the section, if it's the one that does, we will have to put it in place so that it's understood. But, Chair, let me certainly congratulate the team in terms of the presentation that you have. So as some of you were doing the presentation, I kept on deleting some of the questions that I went to ask. But I want to come back with something, Chair. It's unfortunate that perhaps this thing may not be done correctly. What can help us convert the presentation that we have been given into a program? I'm saying that because some of the stories we are hearing now are the stories that we may have heard or we had when we were joining Parliament. Because we don't have the time frame, we may leave it open-ended. So those are the things that, in fact, if we want to meet or conclude, it's for us to turn it. For instance, let's take the correction of these audit findings. You are saying for us, this financial year, we have a disclaimer. We are aiming that next financial year, we get the qualification. Thereafter, we are getting the unqualified. I won't talk about the other years because I won't know what it is, but we are aiming to get a clean audit. We have a program that's leading us, that we now know. If I may put it like that, what's critical for you is the revised policy on supply chain. Somewhere when I was reading, it was saying very soon. Very soon has no time frame. And, but that's a very critical one, as well as the delegation of authority. You know, I was interested to know, because when reading this stuff, you say, hey, but this thing, I started asking, did we have policies when the unsanctioned commission decision taken on RV laser? That's right. Because if I were in your position, for me, that would have been an instant dismissal. Right? I don't know what you did, but the answer was, you are instituting the investigations, those are the things we don't know. Because if we were to say, let's close ourselves somewhere and unpack it, as much as we're not even taking those documents, but that is going to help us paving the way forward and be sure. Because at times we say it's easier said than done. You may give us all the presentation you've been giving us. We don't want a glossy presentation, but we want a presentation that will be a little bit practical. We are saying the presentation today, at least it does give us. I remember when I was doing the speech, I was saying we've got contracts that are in the pipeline. We say the same thing today, that we've got contracts that are in the pipeline. What is it that convinces us that we've got some kind of a concrete evidence or proof that yes, we have cracked this one, it will never go away? We don't want a situation, for instance, we visited you and a month later we are getting that, hey, the name is in a squabble of 250 million or something like that. That was saying that as a contract, apparently we say to an organization, we'll give you this, and we fail to make the time for that. And then that is, in fact, putting us as an organization in a very bad state as an organization. It damages our image as an organization. Right? So what I'm requesting here, Chair, is can we begin to convert or translate today's presentation into programs? If it need be, some of the things you have said, well, I can jot them down and you then give us, you attach alongside that the dates that we think we may achieve. I'm covered by Honorable Mukuchabu, but I was interested, although I hope you give us a definite answer, but what's your take when the minister announced that he will now be giving loans? Will you be in a position to bear in mind that you've got loans that you still have to repay, and now you will have other hours accumulated? This is an accounting purpose effect. You know, I was saying to one of us that, hey, but it looks as if even the board is coming in as well corrupt as those that have walked out. Because I'm saying, if at one stage we were at 5.8, and now when you are in now, we will come with 3.8. Your mission is to improve the situation, but why is it going well? Because you explain to us the process that this is what you follow as perhaps the organization to try and correct. Because ours will say if it is at 5.8, even if there is anything that happens, at least it won't be below 4. If that's the case, we will need a better explanation why it goes to 3.8. I've talked about, right. Now this one as well that we mentioned when we're coming in, it's answered, but I'm not sure whether this is the correct answer, which I doubt it is the correct answer. We offered employees the severance package. How many of them that applied? 306 applied. But 105 was not accepted. What was the reason? I offer you that you may come, take this, and then all of a sudden when I've applied, and then you say, no, I'm not accepting yours. I'm saying that it's different from the analysis we have been given, that now we see the light in the tunnel. Now we are saying we are encouraging people not to exit. That's what you have said to us. That now it looks as if things are going back to normal. But at the time when we're inviting people, the situation was not as we are giving the presentation today. I think I want to know, if possible, the demographics of those that exit. I've got my own political analysis I have in mind. I want to allay such political analysis that, you know, could it be or not, so that I get all those the explanation. One other thing is, which to me is critical. You had 23 performance indicators. We achieved only 7. Somewhere in the region of 16, we did not. But what we are citing as the reason for that is the liquidity constraint. I'm not sure, going into this financial year now, have we addressed the liquidity performance constraint? If not, are we heading for a similar situation where we won't meet these performance indicators? Because it goes without saying that we may be heading again for another 16 if we're not going to get perhaps enough resources to address the situation. We are aware as well that the NAV is 60% international and 40% inside. I may be giving the wrong information. When are we turning that the other way around? That at least let us be local, more local than international or outside. Because we feel when things are dry, you always go home. And some other people within the countries where they are, they also want to have we were discussing saying that, hey, if we don't make use of the resources we have, like the engineers that we have trained, don't we feel that some of these people, by the time we are saying that we are taking off, they get pushed? Right? That's the situation that we are facing, because there are many other people that in fact may begin to hunt these people. I would like you to share this one so that you understand why I'm saying some of the questions were in fact directly. I was saying that, do we see Daniels arriving at the storm? Because you are saying that we are facing the storm. If that's the case, give us few indicators that we are sure that at least because of 1, 2, 3 that the name, that the name we are going to survive. There are quite a number of indicators you have mentioned, but if you feel that you still need to answer this question, I'll be fine. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think the board, when they are coming here to present, like today, you present to us and for others, but you must know that in the next meeting, we have to give us the feedback that what you achieve or what is the progress for that, that you present for us, because it was formally present. And then you present the third time. So we need also the achievement that what we achieve. And then the other question that maybe I can ask, maybe Daniel explain for us the community what has the impact of not receiving this 1.8 billion to its balance sheet. And it is a business operation. And the second one, what the key fundamental of Daniel Corporate plan and the management of the corporate plan in turnaround plan? As you know, that is Daniel that maybe can identify the compliance in the case. And a full of guarantees and knowledge. In what way Daniel does need to support in order to ensure that investment is given? What is the progress with the desired implementation of corrective action to address Daniel's going to concern issue of race in the director? If maybe in terms of budget, from now the financial year, do you think we will survive up to the next budget? And if it is not, what is the plan? Thank you, Chair.
Let me join my colleagues in welcoming the report and applauding the board and the management in seeing the light, because they are bringing hope. What they are presenting to us, there is hope. We see a different light, and one wonders whether we reach that light, but the way you are presenting that hope, I believe you will reach the sunshine. And say you really have a good track record in terms of saying we have a year, this is our way. This is what we got. And indeed, when somebody has a vision and mission, start to take a backward step, then assess, then going forward. But bear in mind, for the next 5 years we are here, we'll be keeping the track record. And the hope that you're presenting, we believe we'll still have it. We'll still be having it. So, Chair, allow me to ask you questions on the presentation. And one of those would be on the slide 17. They were presenting to us the root causes for disclaimer. And in one of those, you see there's inadequate skills, knowledge of the accounting standard. Then my question becomes, because already you have a problem, or there was a retrenchment of employees, even though it cannot be in your time or told in your time, then are we not seeing this coming again in the next financial year as one of the root causes of your disclaimer? And how are you planning to deal with it? Because it can come again, it will come again as one of the reasons of the disclaimer. What is your plan in place? On that matter. But on the same spot going forward, as much as it has hindered, and we came to Benin on oversight, let me highlight this. You took us through your plantation and everything, the shooting range. And my wife, you have seen the old man in the shooting range. I did not see any young person. The issue or the question is transferring of skills. At the same time, vis-a-vis your root causes of disclaimer. And that old man, if really you were transferring a skill, who could have got a young person who's been trained, then it means, if you know, I'm not saying if, in terms of pension, in terms of, God can take the old man. I'm not saying he must go home, but is there in reality? What will happen to demand if you don't have a transfer of skills and just the situation? And now, currently, are you in a position to employ any other staff? Maybe, because we are talking about work. All of us were agreeing, we are presenting very well, and you've got that thing of saying you're going to make it. Any chance soon for any employment on that basis? The other question is that, tell us, give us your hindrance, the things that stops you in terms of policy issue, policy restriction. You come here to the committee as parliament. We need to understand and assist you. We are in this together. We are not just sitting here questioning you. We have interest of state-owned entities to go back on its foot. But then, what are the policy restrictions that stops you to excel, that stops the entity to do its business, especially on the basis of partnering? If you get partners, is there any policy matter that stops you to get, or you get an investor and you get a partner that wants to partner with you? But then, based on policy issues, the partner says no, 1, 2, 3 does not pay money, I'm giving you money, but you have restrictions. What are those, and how can we assist you as a recommender to partner? I don't know whether I'm getting my question, because I think it's very much critical. Remember when you spoke, we came to your oversight. You only deal with sensitive and specific products that the market might not be brought in South Africa. You have to get internal buyers. Then what obstacles are you coming across? that we want Parliament to look into that. As much as one of my colleagues was talking about Law 4060, maybe the question would be, in all the products that we produce, ammunitions and others, are we as South Africans referring to such funders all using your product, or even though you have the same based on price issues, they can even go and have a market in the other country? Do you have such cases or not? Because we have interest, we want you to go back to a status where you are baking food, you are sustainable. As much as at the back of our mind, all of us here, the midterm budget, the minister, everybody was speaking about it. Bailout gone. There's no longer bailout. But then, are we ready? Ask the minister. I can't say you alone to take up and be sustainable with the loans. Any, since you had it, even though it might be last week, any thought, any proposal with the board, with your meeting, with the executive, how will you sustain yourself in those? You still have the recap that Honorable Mkhwanazi was talking about. And in terms of that recap, obviously, that's what we're anticipating, and we're not saying it must be like that. Unfortunately, it's beyond the committee's control. But then the 1 billion that you are a foot step, what is your plan? To have to recover the loan back? Why you still have it, you want it to push other debt that you already have. So those are the questions that we are saying. As much as you are dealing, talking fancy about the turnaround strategy, realistically, are we going to realize that light that we are talking about? You have one division that maybe you're planning or is already closed down. How does it impact the entity? Give us a break. About it. What is your plan? How will it assist you to regain, go back to the status quo that you used to have even before this leadership? Remember, you inherit everything. We'll just refer to go back to its food as demand. Closing down one division to the issue of a new investor that you're talking about, 6.1 billion. Tell us how hopeful and make other investors to come and bring back the pride of South Africans. How will it impact now? How successful can it be? In bearing in mind that you still have outstanding debt, but as much as we are here, you see, South Africans are watching, they want hope. They want Dinar to bring back the pride. We are proud of Dinar because it's South African brand, it's South Africa on its own. Therefore, I believe when you present, you need to give us hope as South Africans. You need also to attract the investors. It's not only based on one-on-one meetings with investors, but this is Parliament. You can't give us false information, but we brief on that and try to give us more meetings. And I still, Chair, I don't know much about Dinar's Asia. but can you give us a brief about it? It has got as it is. Let us not modify it. Go as it is. What is happening? What is the plan? What makes delays? And what made us to be where we are today, Denel Asia? Chair, allow me to pause. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. Just you for asking you, Chair, to take us through with your team. Let me take this opportunity also to begin the appreciation of this comprehensive information you just gave us. I must also allude to the fact that it is still positive. I think for the first time we met Denel when we undertook that particular oversight, we exposed ourselves to, for some of us, including myself, I was extremely ignorant about what Denel's work exactly is all about. But I think when I went there, I could see the importance of that entity. And I'm one of the people who feel very strong that it needs to be improved so that it becomes profitable and developed to contribute to this economy of this country. However, I want to start with a question that is in the social media. It's not on your... I did ask Mr. December when I met him on the corridors yesterday about the validity of that particular WhatsApp information that was trending on the media. And not because I don't know or I don't understand where it comes from. I know for the fact that you've got a new board, which is not necessarily contaminated yet with the previous shenanigans. Also, I am mindful that we have just appointed a new executive, which everybody appreciated here in this portfolio committee. But I just wanted to come from you as a board that is supposed to understand that also its role is to transform South Africa society and deepen transformation from the minority to majority. Therefore, I want us to be put into a clear position where the relative that has been established currently, which we all appreciate, is it a representative reflecting the nature of the executive we would like to see right through the country? I know for a fact that the people who have written that are fight-back kind of people, whom some of them are implicated in the corruption and state capture. I know that really. But it doesn't mean what they raise has to be ignored if there is a validity in that. Because we do have, they might exploit a weakness in our continuous execution and addressing the problems they created, but that doesn't mean that we still not have any responsibility to transform the country to be truly reflective of the demographic and the community that we are serving. So that's my first question, Chairperson. Secondly, I think it's in line with what most of the committee members have raised. This issue of the care conditions around it. I don't have a problem with the low issue. Maybe you are capable to resolve it. But my issue is that those nature of conditions some are looking to the fact that we have to do away with some other operations. To what extent that these conditions will affect the community of Dinyala, particularly the workers and so on? Is there any, I'm not trying to suggest that even if you can't pay everybody, you have to stick with everybody. But I'm interested to know to what extent is those conditions that have been put to the south when we were given that amount, to what extent are they going to affect your operations and the people that are working there, to be specific? Thirdly, there is a complaint, also it's not in the statement. There is a complaint we received from the speaker office about a certain Mr. V. Salman. And we, in the beginning of September, we immediately forwarded that correspondence to your offices. And I thought perhaps you would be saying something about it, especially when one of you has asked us to. Because it's a complaint that we are also fresh out to respond to. As far as we know for the fact that we are not in some city, we're not, we are a parliament. But it doesn't mean we ignore complaints. It was forwarded by the speaker to us, and it's about the rain metal. I think it would need to be taken to confidence as to what is really happening there. When you read the complaint, it's reasonable to us, but we don't know anything about it. That's why we think that it's something that we cannot leave here without having at least. We were expecting something to be said by this time. Unfortunately, that up until this point, we still don't see anything. We have not received anything in that regard. My other issue, in our oversight visit to Dinyala, which also talk to that page 18 of the financial results, which has been referring to going down 8%. One of the reasons is people who are not doing work. And we witnessed that when we went to visit some of the classes. There were people who are not doing anything in their plans. For a lot of reasons that were put into us. Some were also related to state capture and related complications, if that's the right. But it was based on the fact that the standards are no longer, are no longer procuring. Things like your bullets from Dinyala. And I made a stupid comment from an ignorant ordinary South African. I said, what are we going to do with the bullets? We are not involved in any war. And they said, war bullets are just a 10% bullets in South Africa. Thousands and millions of bullets in South Africa are used daily for training. Therefore, if Sadaf is not procuring bullets from Dinyala, it means the business of Dinyala is going to be affected. That's why you were limited the amount of bullets that are being produced. And there is the machines that are not being operational because of there is no demand. And I think that, to me, is a serious problem. I think that question still needs to. I'm here. I didn't know that you were the former general
in your board chair. Now that is, you know, more than one. They have to tell us what is the problem, you know. Because I think before, we also have the responsibility as a standing committee to engage a standing committee, our colleagues, everybody who put to the committee, that is to say, from travel us, what is the problem that we have got that responsibility that is still we have to do as we do as a committee. But also, we still want to what extent are you addressing that? What is the responsibility also to assist you as a committee? My last issue is around what is diversification. I think it was raised in this committee at some point, and it was raised sharply. You know, having went through orientated myself with the general operation, and I was exposed to the skills that I never thought that we had. I didn't know that in South Africa we can produce something with 4 wheels, except human parole. So I didn't know that we can have a car or a bus or a truck from us without having an airplane and all those things. I didn't know that we do have those things. Having been exposed to that, I think by now, some form of, because we are not a fighting nation, you know, we have a transformation in South Africa that was never been open, fighting a form of what's happening in other countries. It was a negotiated kind of a settlement, because by very nature, we are not, even our MK soldiers were not necessarily about attacking directly the South African army. We are peace-loving people. Therefore, we cannot be having a huge company such as and only for producing the material for killing, you know, for destruction, you know. Therefore, I think some form of, we suppose by now, Honorable Mr. DT, or maybe General DT, we suppose to be at least having a car produced by South Africans. We are supposed to produce cars. If we do have those skills, why do we have to concentrate on producing better, you know, instead of doing something that could improve the quality of life of South Africans? You know, Koreans produce cars, you know, even we will end up having countries that are below us economically that produce cars. I mean, we're tired of German cars, we're tired of, we are even having the Chinese cars. We would like to produce cars, and you are holding us from that, looking at the skills that are there. To me, it yields a charge in terms of helping this nation out of this quagmire. I'm sorry if I exaggerated it, but looking at, I didn't know that we've got such skills in our country. Having exposed to those skills, I think generally, including Trump, by the way, are holding the transformation of this country, whether it's because they have reduce our country to be captured by business or whatever. Thank you.
I think it's your time now to take us through.
Thank you very much, Chair. And I think maybe the way I would start is to try and comment on the broader issues and then turn over to on the CFO on what is really their duty to give the details to you. But first of all, on the broader issue about why does it look like we have moved from a notional 8 billion of revenues to 3.5, and it looks like we are going down. The way as a board we comforted ourselves, among other things that management will share with you on the details side, is the fact that with the AG being present, we have had to go back and review.
review every assumption they made for that 8 billion. In other words, what you are looking at is an attempt to get to the correct base of what actually you now made. So the AG has been able to get us to open every contract to understand why they made an assumption that that revenue would be realized. And a lot of it could not be. So the way you should read the huge numbers is that unfortunately from our year one, maybe next year too, the AG with our new finance team is reviewing the assumptions that we made in those contracts. That's why they refer to the IFRS rules and new accounting principles, which we should have followed even then in some cases, and we had failed to correctly account for our revenue. So we are dealing today with a historical issue of not accounting properly on our revenue. And you will gradually see us coming down to what is probably the correct base, plus our new revenues that we are bringing in now with new contracts will then be accounted for correctly, because we have now brought in a team, brought in internal audit and the AG to properly define things correctly. It's a very tough thing to accept, because it's almost saying I made 8 billion, but you look in the bank, it's not there, and you say, but what does that mean? Looks like you said you made that money, but I don't see it. And then with us, we have had to go back and figure out where did it go? What did they mean by the contract? The AG and us are simply trying to clean up that to the correct way. And then the more you look at what is beginning to look closer to the correct way, until next year when we start to reflect the new sales that we have done, you realize that we have basically been running D&L on the basis of the notion of large number of revenues, increasing cost of D&L, when in fact the money is not in the bank account. So those are the things we're trying to resolve. It won't be easy. We'll continue to explain and to define that with you. And when we have more and more time together, we will hopefully get to a proper understanding of that. On the issue of the RDM complaints, unfortunately I'm not aware of it, but so the management will take us through it. And on the issue of diversification, just to get it over with, definitely, as you all know, the board you have, and most of the non-executive board of SOEs are individual South Africans that literally raise their hands to come and assist government turn around the institution. They believe in the institution. They, at least for me and my board, I feel honored that my board spends so much time. They put in their brains into it. We also confronted that very issue today. If D&L can build such top-class ambulances, is it not possible maybe one day to test whether or not there couldn't be a civilian one for our hospital, and maybe give you as a parliamentarian the pressure to then go and speak to the other parliament committees to see whether that is not possible. Similarly, around other vehicles, we still think that D&L really has the capacity to support the state, including the private sector in various areas. But importantly, when we are talking about partnerships and we're talking about strategic equity partners, we are largely talking about still keeping the IT within South Africa, retaining jobs within South Africa, so that we don't lose that out of 700% and it leaves the country. So our attempt would be to stick around those broad measures. I think the last issue that maybe I can comment on is what has been in social media. I'm proud to say that we did try
to get people to look at our website to see who our executives are. And we are proud to say on the top leadership of Vina, we have the CFO in the South African Standard, it's a colored lady. The executive HR, an African woman. The group COO, an African male. And on that four group, that is the only white male. And then we go to the public site where they focus on the social media a lot on our aeronautical. What they did was to only choose to publish areas where they had maybe were Indian. If you look on our website, you'll see very much we've got fantastic African males and females and who are in the Exco. But to do everything properly, Danny, I think just like we were able to answer more questions in writing to the committee, we should look for an opportunity if we cannot through the chair. Send the division the new structure, show them the secondary layer, who are the heads of the various divisions, so that our committee becomes the people that explain to everybody what the reality is. That is simply to share with you our commitment to whatever limitations, because we've only been there for a short time, to make sure that we still live up to the expectation of the country. Similarly, there were a lot of questions that were being asked of a policy nature. For example, what are we going to do now that the our formidable and brilliant Minister of Finance saying that if anybody needs anything, I'll give them a loan. We are having a workshop in November this month where we will be engaging also with DPE and on the policy side with defense, just to be dealing with some of these operating conditions to make sure that we can come up with a thought through response to all of it as a team of dinner on how we can survive within it. In other words, right now for any one of us to answer, it will be what I think, what the CEO thinks, what anybody thinks. The best way we felt to deal with it is to combine our heads and look at what it effectively means if this happens and if that happens. And I can confidently tell you that we will come back to you with a well thought through joint answer on the implications on DNL. And I think with that I would have dealt with the floor issue, and I would like to hand over to the, I think the easier way is to start with the CFO. Your questions are pure and very direct, and then to Danny, and making sure that the chair of audit and my colleague here, we can always add and infuse at the end to what you guys have dealt with. Over to you.
Thanks, Chi. So, Chi, I think perhaps the first response would be around the reduction of revenue by 38%. And I think Adam now, Chair, couldn't have articulated it better, but I'll try to give you some of the detail. When you look at that 3.8 billion, which has really declined by that 38%, and you see that there was an 8 billion and a 7 billion in the 14-15 and 15-16 years, that is exactly explained by the fact that when you have a long-term contract, you will often receive an advance payment guarantee, so they give you money ahead of you starting the job. You haven't yet achieved milestones, so instead of that advance payment guarantee being shown as a contract liability, because that's what it is, so it's a credit, and it shouldn't have gone a credit as a liability, it shouldn't have gone to a credit of revenue. Those are some of the things that we've seen happening. So when the AG came and did our audits, they did 100% sampling of every single contract. Every single contract was opened up, and we then had to reclassify the revenue, which is the credit, and also look at the advance payment guarantees as well as the performance obligations, in terms of how those contracts have been interpreted from an accounting standards perspective. So that process is ongoing. We think that the revenue, when it becomes normalized, might get to about the 7 billion. We're hoping that it can get to a bigger number than that as we divest some of the businesses and look at issues like diversification. But for the next 3 years, we think that we will slowly improve on to 3.8 billion. So I don't want to go into more detail around it because we're currently looking at the corporate plan to see how we move that number north. And that leads me into the second question around the capability of the finance people and the finance function. So just on a high level, first of all, to answer the question around the audit, we don't plan to fail, Honourable Member. So my fixed plan for finance includes how do we not get a disclaimer this year, and what are the things we need to negotiate with our auditor, the AG, to make sure that we get on the same page around interpretation issues of accounting. Accounting has become complicated in recent years. How do we make sure that just in terms of submission of our information, they receive information on time, and we get to the deadline of 2 months after the financial year end for at least an audit opinion. We've also introduced into the audit fixed plan, we're going to do an interim audit so that early on the AG will get a heads up around those areas where they can rely on and not have to do 100% sample sizes anymore, because I think we've been through that history. And so we've engaged them. They've agreed with our plan. The audit committee chairperson and the audit committee have agreed with their plan. And Chair and Honourable Members, I am saying to you that we working very hard to make sure that we get a good result in terms of at least getting things in on time, getting them audited properly, and making sure that we as the AG are aligned in terms of that. On the people side of the finance function, there's 189 positions in finance across the business. There's 29 vacancies. We're going through a process of making sure that we put the best people into those positions so that they're able to make sure that we achieve against our management fixed plan for audit, and we also start providing the company with more credible reporting information. So those are the two things from a finance perspective. There are some things, and I think Donnie will talk to this, around supply chain that we're currently talking to National Treasury on at the moment. So our plan was third week in November. We have put proposals around single source suppliers, industrialized suppliers, and sole source, with how the PFMA can help us as we operate in this globally competitive environment. And we need to get supply over a long period of time. And I'll ask Donna to go through some of that. And then the last issue that I'll deal with is around the liquidity plan and the liquidity challenge, because I think the Honourable Member asked an extremely valuable question. So we have a short-term liquidity plan. The short-term liquidity plan gets us to June 2020. Some of the alternative funding mechanisms we're looking at in terms of working with the banks, and we ask the banks to support us around how do we finance big projects, how do we bring in trade finance, and how do we look at taking these long-term projects that span over many years in terms of breaking up the project to finance us outside of the traditional banking system. But we are also talking to the banks around making them understand better how does the NAL sell its product into the market. And without going into all the issues around NCACC, we are saying to the banks, you need to understand how we sell our products into the market and where we get our mandates, because on a lot of our projects, we actually present a defense solution as opposed to an attack solution. So, Chair, I'm going to leave it there in terms of those big issues, and I'm going to ask Donnie to take the rest.
Thank you, Carmen. Thank you, Chairperson. Again, thank you very much for all the good inputs. We appreciate the recognition. Obviously, I think trying to answer all these questions under pressure in a few minutes will not do it justice. So I think we have to really create an opportunity to discuss more in detail, and to also present you with, like we did in the past, with some written responses on the important questions. But Chair, in any event, I will try to go through the main topics and add to the comments made by the chairperson of the board and by the group CFO. So firstly, on the point of supply chain policy, we absolutely and fully agree that this is a key focus area for us that we have to improve on. I mean, assuming Danel does around 4 billion revenue, then supply of material is around 1.5, 1.8, up to 2 billion of that. So it is a significant portion of our cost base. So no question, there's an opportunity to optimize, to make the organization more profitable. But similarly, because of the quantum of that, it is also an opportunity for mismanagement, for corruption and so on. So it's absolutely an acute focus area for us. We recognize that. We have taken active steps to absolutely improve the governance in this domain, to make sure that no single individual, for example, can approve a supplier or approve a transaction and pay a supplier. So we really improved on that. Carmen alluded to the fact that we are in discussions with National Treasury to look at the regulations around exactly what are applicable to Danel. We're looking at, for example, to pre-qualify panels of specialists for different domains. We have it typically for legal and so on, to make sure that our speed of execution is improved as a result of that. We have a draft of the supply chain policy. It has been reviewed in the executive committee, but what is crucial to complete that is the input from National Treasury. This is what we need to do in terms of supply chain. I want to also comment on the request for an action plan and a program of activities. We absolutely have that internal. We have a register of all our strategic initiatives. We have a summarized version of that to basically state what is the initiative, what is the current status, is it on plan, time-wise, what is the next action, who is responsible, the typical internal control measures. So we're actively monitoring that, we're reviewing it in our EXCO meetings, we are discussing it in our board meetings, we include it in our monthly and quarterly reports to DPE. So if you're interested in that level of detail, we absolutely have all those actions well defined. For example, the delegation of authority has been approved by our internal risk subcommittee of the board, and it will go to the board meeting on the 25th of November to ask for approval. So on all those actions, Honourable Member, I can assure you that we have detailed plans, we have defined the actions, we know the dependencies, we have actions on that responsible people, and we're tracking the progress against that. I want to briefly comment on sustainability of the various operations in the business. So Chairperson and Honourable Members, I remind you the main part of the business, and I'll go through it one by one just briefly to comment. So the first one is PMP, that some of you had the privilege of visiting together with us. In this world, the primary product there is small caliber ammunition that we sell to the police services, to our local defense force, and also to the hunting community in South Africa. And we also do some exports. But that business has become very much commoditized. So it's a high volume business, there are many players in that market, and as a consequence, the prices, the profitability is under enormous pressure. This is also the area in our business where we have most of our staff, Chairperson, just over 800 people. The factory is old, as you saw, the equipment and so on there is very old. We also try and manage the full value chain. So we do the full cycle from making the basic cups, the cartridges, the explosive part, the points for the ammunition and all of that. So our plan in this regard is to see if we can take smaller involvement in the value chain and do the parts where we do it well and where we can do it economically viable. So this is what we intend to do. Of course, one of the consequences will be that we have to modernize the factory then for the parts that we will retain. So this is the rough plan for PMP to make it sustainable. But no question, PMP will be difficult to break even. even in the next few years in its current form. So we have to do something drastic in that regard. One of the questions was also related to local demand, and we see a significant decline both in the Department of Defense spending and also police spending, and in general the security cluster as is referred to in South Africa. So I mean, no, you know, no issue in the media over the last month. We have been blamed by the SAPS that we are not delivering ammunition, but the reality is we don't have orders to that. We have even produced some stock to have quick response time and so on. We have met with the Commissioner of Police, myself, and we're trying to expedite those orders for 9mm and 5.56mm ammunition. So that's what we can do. We can try and improve the demand. We can try and compete where the opportunities exist, but even with all of that, PMP will still have a sustainability challenge in its current form. So we have to reform and improve it. In terms of the next business, which is the NEL Dynamics, which is the missile business that we're very proud of, we are probably one of five or seven countries that can produce missiles. And this is something we should be proud of, that we should continue to invest in, and that we should cherish and protect. In this space, Chairperson, we have significant order backlog, we have significant opportunities, and we have significant capabilities and people that can deliver these type of products. So for Dynamics, I'm not so concerned that the business will not be sustainable. I'm sure, I'm confident, and this is one of the areas we absolutely intend and focus to grow that business. Also here there are very interesting spin-offs into the diversification objective. There are, for example, our UAV, unmanned aerial vehicle capabilities is in this group. We have been approached by some of the other SOEs to provide solutions to do asset monitoring and asset protection and so on for them. And some of these programs can go into hundreds of millions of rands. So also there's a potential to diversify into what we call adjacent businesses close to what we currently do. Chairperson, honorable members, the next core business is aeronautics. So this is what remains after the aerostructure exit, which we intend to conclude by April in next year. So that aerostructures exit will be concluded. We will retain some of the basic capability, so we still want to be able to do prototyping of aerostructure parts and so on. So keep some of that capability. But the aeronautics part will then be related to what we call MRO, maintenance, repair, operations. So here we are the original equipment manufacturer for all the South African, or the main South African air assets. So for the C-130 transporter aircraft, the Oryx helicopter, for the Royfalk helicopter, our own product, we need to service those aircraft. They need to be serviced obviously after a number of flight hours. We do what we call midlife upgrades on those aircraft and so on. So this is a business of around 1 billion a year. And of course, when South Africa make a program on maritime patrol aircraft and so on, we can also do the same service for those new aircraft platforms to be introduced. And we also do a lot of work in Africa for the Kenyan Air Force and for others in terms of helicopter engine support services and so on. We have a number of licenses for international helicopter-specific suppliers and to service their platforms. Of course, another opportunity, maybe a bit long shot, is to do more of this type of work for the South African Airways and for SA Express. So we also in discussion to see what we can do and how we can support them, because the total sort of aircraft fleet in South Africa is quite attractive. The MRO space, in our view, is around 5 billion if one consolidates all of those service operations. Then I go to Landwirts. Briefly, Landwirts is the capability chair that you referred to. They can produce armored cars and so on, as well as our artillery capability, which is globally recognized in terms of the performance of those weapon systems. Here we have a number of international export contracts, and I think also this business can be sustainable. We are now consolidating the operations in the NEL vehicle systems and the NEL land systems to make sure that we optimize and regroup the operations to be more sustainable.
The last one, smaller one, is the Overberg at Eastridge here at Anderson, and also this business operate small, around 80 million of turnover. They're doing quite well. They've been profitable, and this is something that we should also be proud of as South Africans. Many of our international customers come and visit us and use that facility to qualify their missiles. So they shoot the missile, launch it from an air platform, or they even launch a missile from a ship to the shore. We track those missiles with very sophisticated sort of equipment that can track the profile, the height, you know, the movement of the missiles, and ultimately prove that those missiles are effective and they can hit a target either on land or sea or in the air. So yeah, I think and I believe that we have a sustainable business. We have challenges in PMP and in the landwards business, but for the other main parts, I'm confident that if we focus, if we do the right things, and if we invest, those businesses can be long-term sustainable. So yes, we believe in the future of the NEL. We believe in what we have. I made a number of notes also on diversification, because there's a lot of interesting things that we do that we don't necessarily always talk about. So, of course, we need to look at new revenue streams. Most defense companies today in the world, especially the successful ones, they have successfully migrated from providing hardware, providing missiles, artillery solutions, ammunition, into more homeland security, as they call it. So it's all sorts of sophisticated software solutions that do a number of things. And I think we have to go down that track, and we're having those discussions. We're having a workshop hopefully later in November to discuss what does fourth industrial revolution mean for the NEL, what opportunities does it present to us. It's issues like cybersecurity. We have a question from the police to do drone detection and ultimately the drone destruction, you know, if it's something with a weapon on or so. We're also actively looking at what more can we do with the capabilities that we have. For example, in Mekem, we have the canine, the dog unit, which is wonderful to visit. And, you know, I think we have around 200 of those dogs, well-trained for a number of applications. And the chair and I often discuss about what more can we do, you know, which other areas can those dogs be deployed, border protection, scanning of vehicles that come in and so on. So there's a lot of these actions. I spoke a little bit about work for other SOCs. We are actively exploring this. What I think most of you, Chair, and members might also not be aware of is that we produce very critical chemicals for the mining industry, for Sasol and so on. It's a business of around 70 million rand within PMP, and it's part of explosives and other chemicals for mining applications. What is also interesting is we have a concept design and some elements of a prototype for an African light aircraft, so designed and developed in Africa for Africa. Now this aircraft is very interesting. It's, it can be in the passenger configuration around 20-seater, but it can also be converted in various different configurations to carry cargo, to be a Casavac, a medical type aircraft, and so on. So we are doing a lot of great things, and maybe we should improve on how we communicate and talk about it. And most certainly we are thinking about the future and how we can diversify and not only do the traditional things that we're doing. I want to briefly comment on the NEL Maritime Chair. It is something that we are actively looking at, but like any business, we are cautious. We need to understand exactly what the potential is, what is the business case. In principle, I believe there's space for what they call dry docks, capability to service ships that come in and to service maybe similar to the air business of maintenance, repair and operations to do it for the naval environment. But we need to be sure that this is a viable, economically sustainable business case. And we have some of that capability in the NEL, so no question we can do this. But we need to fully understand if it makes sense, if it makes business sense, and if it's a space that we can be successful in. So that is ongoing in terms of looking at new revenue streams.
a brief comment, Chair, on the Danel Training Academy, which is currently located in Kempton Park as part of our aerospace operations. Now, this business has a long and successful track record, and we train both local and international students, primarily in the domain of aerospace. So we qualify technicians, for example, as aerospace technicians. There are a number of different programs, different durations. They can do a six-month course, a one-year course. Some of it is longer term. But we are actively discussing under the leadership of the new group HR executive how to diversify this facility to make it more general, to present other subjects, and to have broader skills training in the facility. Today, the facility is not profitable. The cost is around 40 million, and I think this year we're making a loss of 16 on that. But I think we have the potential to make it a facility not only applicable to the aerospace environment in a broader context. And we have, in fact, been approached by a number of local players to ask if we can train their people and train their technicians and create skills in that environment. I'll just quickly go through and see if there's anything else that I need to cover. So on the case, thanks for the reminder, Chair, of Mr. Selden. We have received the inquiry some weeks ago, Chairperson. We have investigated in detail. In fact, we got an independent investigator because we wanted to have independence in principle. I've received the report 2 weeks ago, and we have provided feedback to DPE on that in the last days. But the long and short of this situation, Chair, if you allow me, is that unfortunately there is a history here of an individual that has been employed in four companies, and in all four of those companies, three of them were Danel and one was another company. He sort of has disputes with the management, then he takes negotiating an exit package. So this is a long history, four times in four different companies. So we have reviewed it. We have made a recommendation, we have made findings, but the long and short is, from our perspective, the Danel or our associate company, RDM, is not guilty of any wrongdoing, and we have the evidence to prove that. And you can receive that report for, through DPE.
What is the process to be, the government's process to be, would already engage if they're already
thank you, Chair, for the input on that. So, Honourable Chairperson and Member, on our certifications, especially in the aerospace environment, it's a critical thing for us to have the local and international certification to be able to service these aircraft. This is quite a complex world that I've lived in the last 25 years. So, for example, for military aircraft, we need a certain certification. For civilian aircraft, you need another certification. In South Africa, typically, you need a CAA, Civil Aviation Authority certification, and so on. We had a challenge in the aeronautics world where we have not been able to retain our so-called EASA certificate, which is a European certificate. But we are actively working with the authority to get that reinstated. We have taken all the corrective actions. We've had a number of pre-visits, but the nature of these is they want to see for 3 months, 6 months that you are able to conform to the standards before those certificates are reinstated. But we are confident that we will get recertified and that we will receive the certificate early in next year again. So it is one of the things that is high on the agenda. It's actively discussed in our executive committee.
every time we meet, and we will achieve that. We will get that certification back.
And then last, Danny, why when people are applying for permanent partnership that you did not accept some of them?
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, on the voluntary severance packages, when we offered these packages, we always made it clear that there will be a management prerogative to approve or not to approve. Now, what is of course very critical, on the one hand, we want people to apply because we want to reduce our cost, and you know, in some areas you have excess capacity, so in the non-critical or non-technical areas. But what happened, also some of our very critical expertise applied for VSPs, and then of course we cannot allow them to leave, and that's a simple outcome of the process. And I mean, can you imagine if you have to deliver a missile system, you have 20 critical components, you have two people that can make one of those components as an example, and they apply for the voluntary severance, then you lose the whole business. So we simply cannot do that. And of course in that process some people naturally get upset because they apply and they want to be considered. But that's the process, and that's how it happened and why it happened. We simply had to, as management, in some cases say no, because the business impact is significant, and we simply cannot afford that. So that's the management judgment we applied in that regard. So, Chair and committee members, again, we have done a detailed assessment of the profile of our workforce since we came on board in the business. So we have detailed age analysis per department, per skills level and all of that. The reality is around 11% of our workforce will come up for retirement in the next 5 to 7 years. And like most organizations, and we acknowledge that, is we have failed to transfer those skills on a successful level. In some cases we've done it, but I think in most cases, to be absolutely honest about it, we have failed. And we are now actively under the leadership of the Group HR Executive doing that planning of transfer. We have made succession plans, we've looked at transfer of skills, but on the one hand, when those people move out, it's an opportunity, of course, to employ young talents, so we see it as a positive. But also that's why we're actively chasing international and local opportunities to grow the business. So we have interesting programs that the young people can work on. We have very, very good technical people, young talents, but they're typically in the early 30s, so 32, 34. And we've met some of them. I remember, Chairperson, when you visited the DLS facility, remember we showed you the Badger vehicle on DLS, and we had 5 or 6 of these young talents that spoke about the great work that they do. But the reality is we have to do more. We have to be an employer of choice again. We have to grow the business. So the natural process of life, as I think one of the members say, you know, some people will leave, but we need to fill that that paper pipeline with young people and capable people. And we intend to do that, Chair. That's the plan. And of course, we have, in some areas, we have a few people with very important knowledge in their minds. We absolutely have to transfer that, or else we will fail as an organization. So this is something that's very high on our agenda.
Thank you, CEO. I like to say that in South Africa, what happens is that it's like a funnel. You have many young people entering jobs, and a few experienced people are all leaving the other side. And I think as we go along, because it's not a fund, between ourselves and the committee, we should figure out whether there wasn't a way for some of them to retrain, some of them to coach, and to figure out programs like that, given the scenario that however, there were questions around demand generally with expense and whatever. I would like to allow my colleague to comment. And there was a question on the VR data. I would like the chair of audit to comment on that. And I think broadly, we would have answered the question, but I still think we must follow up
with, because there were many and some of them required more detail, to try and do another write-up, if it was possible, Chair, to find a way to do another workshop with us on some of those details, as you know, some of the areas. We would end up being too general to your irritation in the forum, but maybe when we have to do a small workshop, we'd be able to give you the extra facts.
Thank you, Chair. First is to create the committee. You serve as an member of the committee. It's the first time for me to meet with you. I missed my opportunity when you visited us. But I'm delighted to be a member of this board. Where possible, we will use our experience, combined experience, to make it work. We have started to do that under the leadership of Professor Peterson. You indicated to us the land can be used for other things. I think that Daniel has responded to that question. I just wanted to indicate that I think honorable members know that the budget of defense, of the Department of Defense, is declining. And therefore, the buying capacity would also decline. We would like to support the internal agencies as much as we can. So it should not be surprising in some sections when we get orders from outside. That is why Danny and all of us are engaging the internal stakeholders, addressing the Military Command Council, addressing the generals wherever we meet. But we understand their situation, and that is why I'm delighted to get that commitment from you. That it is possible for this committee to talk to your colleagues in the Department of Defense Portfolio Committee and perhaps with Treasury as well. It will go a long way in addressing some of the concerns. And like Chairperson has indicated, it's not always possible to be very open when you do not have, when you have media. I like media for some people. But we have clients that may not be very comfortable in getting the conversations that we have with them openly because they are other competitors. They will say, oh, you go in that way, but in a small workshop. I think some of the details can be discussed so that you are properly informed. There's nothing that we should hide from you. And as indicated by the honorable member, you will go together and we must win together like Springboks. And if we hide certain things, definitely we would lose. So we don't want to lose. South Africa must win. Dinel must win. This whole team is committed to making it work. But I'm very happy with your comment that you are prepared to engage, because some committee members, well, when I was still in uniform, we asked the committee members to engage their colleagues because we were squeezed and we were not getting this commitment. But with your commitment, I'm sure the name will apply to under this new leadership, the executive, the board. So I just wanted to greet you and to say I see it. My thing has been responded to. I know that the chairperson and few members, in fact, not all of us, indicated that the NEL can't be producing just weapons. We must help our people. Like in the Defense Force, they are there to fight and win war, but they also have a strategic objective to help the South Africans. And that is why you see them building bridges, helping the communities. Something like that will happen with Jinan. It's already happening in some circles, and we're also fully committed to that conversation, that we're not just there to come up with weapons of mass destruction and stuff like that. But we operate within the parameters of this country, the laws, the regulatory framework. You know that there is this discussion that why
some people are asking, why do you still need a defense force or a denial when there's no war, there's no possibility of war? Argument is that you must build your defense capabilities when there is no war. Sometimes when you have good defense capabilities, you actually prevent the war. It's a preemptive thing, you prevent war. If your enemy knows that you are well equipped, they will not dream of attacking your army. So, but it's this question people think about in schools, hospitals, what sensitive. We're taxpayers, we're South Africans, but we need something like Dinan for the future. And Dinan, if it is properly supported, will help in the creation of a state of readiness and whatever is there in the legal framework. So we are ready to deliver. And there are indications of this that we're going there with your support.
There were questions around the Nile Asia. The Hong Kong courts have granted conditional liquidation of the Nile Asia. We are in the process now towards final liquidation. As the company did not pay, we do not expect it to be a problem. So there is a liquidator that has been appointed. And as I did state, we expect this to be concluded in 2020. The creation of the Nile Asia about the social media issue that you raised, Chairperson.
I would concur with the comments that the chairperson has already made, that the information was presented very selectively, picking and choosing particular entities to showcase a particular point of view. As a department, what we have done is we have collected the information about the executive management team, and I'll briefly give you an overview of that, and we can submit this information in detail to the portfolio committee so that you have all the statistics at your fingertips. But very briefly, in the case of Donnell, we've got that 69% of their executive management team is African, 15% coloured, 16% white, and of that, 38% of the people are females. I don't know, I can read through all the statistics, but we have it all for Transnet, ESCOM, SAA, SA Express, SAFCO, and Donnell, and the Lexcor as well, which I can share with you. But I think the conclusion that you will see is that although the women is not as represented as 50%, with most of the entities it's well in excess of 30%. And if anything, the representation of Indians and coloured people on the executive committees is very low relative to their representation in the population. So I'd just like to underline that for the committee, and we will certainly share that information with you.
Thank you, for that information. Actually, when I was confronted with that question of that WhatsApp, I asked the people who were contacted at whom they didn't come directly to me that they must give me the overall executive of each and every entity. They must not just pick one from one entity, pick two from that entity. For example, others, they will leave CEO and decide to cash the CFO. And it's convenient for them because they know for a fact that the CEO there might be the person that they don't want to expose at that particular position. Therefore, you could see that the intention was actually to reverse the gains and also to take us out of the shenanigans they are confronted with and of corruption and the everything in case trying to get focus on an issue that is not an alien issue. Because if it was an issue, we would have given us the entire scope of each and every entity so that we can deal with it and confront it. But I'm happy that we will answer that particular issue. On those basis, the honorable members, was our time. Yes, and the meeting that is going to take place here. Can we release the members of the committee to so that we can complete the next 2 minutes and portfolio committee? And we thank you very much for your question.
Page 1, page 2.